recommend or endorse playing the lottery if for any number of reasons, in that the chances of winning are probably pretty slim. But at the same time, I have a confession to make. Last fall, we were actually here, a group of us, and it was a church activity. We were, the elders and their wives were watching the children of some of our young parents, and I was asked before things got started to run and get some ice at this convenience store down at the end of the road here. And if I don't remember the exact date of the what date exactly it was, but I do know it was the week that there was all this hype about the 1-point-something billion-dollar lotto. And I'm standing there getting ready to get some ice, and I notice something over here. I'm not even thinking about it, and I look and I notice, I wonder what's going on, and it's people buying lottery tickets. And so in that moment, I thought, just $2-3. I'll just go ahead and buy it, and I did. And let me let you in on a little secret. Not only that I bought it, I didn't win. And so I understand that there are people who are buying lottery tickets that are feeding a way of life that's not good for them. I understand that there are people with serious gambling addictions. I understand that there are people who struggle with different things. And I tell you what, I have my character flaws, and I will share those with you any time. But one of those is not games of chance and trying to win something. I like the free ones, where you enter it free and get something, and even in those, I enter those and I don't get anything. But there's something about, for some of us anyway, this idea of what it would mean to be rich. I mean, really rich. I mean, filthy rich. What would you do with $1.4 billion? Would that make you rich? Would you consider yourself a rich person? Would you consider yourself, even right now, this moment, right now, a rich person? Are you rich? And before you answer that question, I want you to think about the seriousness of what that means, because Jesus talked about money and finances and our attitude toward money and riches and things a lot, probably almost more than any other subject Jesus talked about. And so in Mark 10, on one occasion, there's a rich ruler who comes up to Jesus and asks him what he can do to have eternal life. And Jesus says to him, what does the law say? And the law says, don't kill and don't steal and don't commit adultery and honor your father and mother. And in that conversation with this rich man, this rich ruler, Jesus says to him, one thing you still lack. Just one thing. This is what you need to do. You need to take what you have, your possessions, take all those things and sell them and then give them to the poor. And then you need to follow me. Give everything you have and you come and you follow me. And we're told on that occasion that the man, while I'm sure there were a lot of good things about this man and about his life. In fact, if you get a chance to read the passage, there's a statement there that says, Jesus looked at this man, and he loved him. He looked at him, He loved him. Jesus knew, though, that there was something that in this man's life was first place in his heart and his life. And that was the security that all of his stuff represented. And he walked away sadly. So, let me get back to the question, are you rich? I guess it would depend on the context. Most of us, if we were kind of in a similar context in our day compared to that day, most of us would say, well, we're not rich young ruler rich. But it's an important question because Jesus, after having this conversation with this young man and his disciples are watching, Jesus makes the statement, it's hard for those who are rich to enter the kingdom of God. And then he goes on to say, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And they were absolutely just astounded that Jesus would say something like that. So, if we ask ourselves that question, am I rich? And especially with the passage that was read this morning in 1 Timothy 6 and what Jesus has to say on numerous occasions, we definitely ought to be concerned about how that may or may not affect us. And I think for most of us, we would say we're not rich. And yet sometimes we go to some place or take a trip or travel to a place such as Haiti. I remember when I went to Haiti several years ago with a group here from Northeast, one of the places that we visited was the poorest area in the poorest country, in one of the poor areas in the whole Western Hemisphere. And I know many of you have been a part of the ministry Hope for Haiti's Children. And I know if you're like me, when you go, you just have this feeling. And you have this thought in your mind. You think about the things that you complain about and what you don't have and what you would want. And then you go to City Soleil and you see the slums and the conditions. And it just totally changes your perspective, doesn't it? Anybody attest to that? It does. It changes your mindset. But then when you come home, you're still thinking about that, but when you come home, you're in a different context now, aren't you? You're in a place now where you're surrounded by a whole lot of people around you who have a whole lot more than you. And you go from thinking about where you were to comparing yourself to others and what you don't have and how much they have. And then you shake it off and maybe you don't think about that too much more anymore. And so we're using some of the materials. I'm using some of Andy Stanley's material from his How to Be Rich series. Yeah, they've actually been doing this down at the church down there in Atlanta for almost every year for about probably 6 or 7 years. And so some of the material that I'll be sharing with you, if you've seen some of those materials, some of it will be familiar to you, some of it won't because a lot of it's mine and I've read and looked at other sources. But it's notice the title of this series is not How to Get Rich. There's a difference. The focal point of what I'm going to say today and next week and the week after that is not how to get rich. There are plenty of people out there who are very eager to help you with getting rich and accumulating wealth, and maybe not quite as many out there to teach us or show us how to live like a rich person or how to be rich, how to live richly. And there is a difference. There really is a difference. Now, Stanley says in one of his sessions, he says there are side effects or potential side effects to being wealthy. And one of those potential side effects is, first of all, just this whole idea of living in denial. And it's simply saying, listen, I don't have to pay attention to this. The application of what Jesus says to the rich young ruler doesn't apply to me. He's rich, I'm not. Paul talks to the rich in 1 Timothy 6. They were rich, I'm not. And yet, it's a relative kind of thing, isn't it? If most of us were asked, are you rich or do you feel wealthy? Most of us would say no, no matter how much money we make. And so actually a survey was done several years ago, and it was done through the Gallup organization, and they asked Americans, how much would an individual have to make or earn in a year to be considered rich or wealthy? And they took all the averages, and it averaged out to be about $150,000. And so that's what, when you take out every American, asking them what does it mean to be rich, and you're asking the poor, the rich, the answer is about $150,000. Well, another survey was done with those who are making money in the $30,000 or $40,000, and they are asked, what do you consider to be rich? And they said, well, about $75,000 is rich. And so when these studies are done, you almost find out universally that nobody wants to say that they are rich, but somebody who makes maybe twice as much as they make is rich. So you end up coming up with this whole situation that nobody ever admits that they're rich, but they know somebody who is rich. It's ironic, isn't it? And it's relative too. The truth is, if you make $33,000, if you have an income of $33,000, you earn in the top 1% of all the people who live on this globe. Do you believe me? If you make $33,000 or more, you are a one percenter. You know, folks like to throw around that term. Once again, what's our point of reference? Our point of reference here for most of us is in this context, but we understand that this world is a big place and that you have people all over this world who make $50 a week or $10 a week or even less. Fact is, from that standpoint, if you're in the 1% in the whole world, I guess that would make you rich, or maybe you make twice as much as that, or three or four or five times as much as that, and you probably still don't feel rich. It's like when you heard that statistic, you didn't just jump up and down and say, Yahoo, I'm rich, didn't even know it. And part of that is because the context of our day. In the culture that we live here in America. I don't know how many of you saw these statistics this week. Came out this week, that 2,000 American millennials were surveyed about stress and stressful scenarios in their lives. And several things were listed, and they could choose from those things, and they came up with the top 20 list of stressors for millennials in America. And so here are the top 20. I'm not going to list all of them, but I'm going to list some of them to you. Losing a wallet or credit card is number one. Arguing with their partner, number two. Commuting and traffic delays, number three. Losing a phone, number four. Arriving late to work, number five. Slow Wi-Fi, number six. Phone battery dying, number seven. Forgetting passwords, number eight. Credit card fraud, nine. Forgetting phone charger, 10. Losing or misplacing keys, 11. Paying bills, 12. Job interviews, 13. Phone screen breaking, 14. Credit card bills, 15. Check engine light coming on, 16. School loan payments, 17. And it amazes me that 17 is not higher than it is. Job security, 18. Choosing what to wear, 19. And washing dishes, 20. Now that I don't know where that one came from. Washing dishes, number 20. But as I look at this list, I think, I'm just going to say it, a lot of these things, or most of these things, are rich people problems. They are. And last week I was talking to you about anger, and I was telling you about the situation when we took that rental car and we got stuck on the road and had trouble getting in touch with roadside assistance, and we had the runaround and we were 4 hours behind. And some of you said last week you didn't finish the story. And so in a quick nutshell, this is how that ended. We finally decided to drive to Knoxville, risking life and limb, to trade in a car, had the conversation with the folks at the car rental place, and I said, look, I really hope you take care of us with this, and you put this down officially as to what happened. And he said, I sure will. And in my mind, I was thinking, they're going to give me this car rental for free. So we got the trade in, went to where we were going, we took the car back. Turned out they gave me a $50 discount on the car, which probably paid for the gas of driving out of the way and the time lost and all of that. But you know what? I made the decision. I made the decision when I go up to this counter, whatever they say, whatever they offer, I'm just going to accept it. It's not worth it. It's not worth the fight. And so I didn't fight. I said, fine. That's fine. $50. That's great. Appreciate the discount. And just this week, Jeannie's not here, but just this week we get something from this car rental place. And I'm thinking in my mind, a check, a check. They're sending a check. And I was so excited, I got the envelope, I ripped it open, I looked at it, and it was a bill for what they did to fix the car. I'm not kidding. And so, especially since I knew I was going to be talking about this subject this week, I said, I'm going to let that go. But Jeannie actually called them up, and then they said we didn't have to pay it. But folks, right when it comes right down to it, that's a rich person's problem. Renting a car, going to Gatlinburg. I know some of you might disagree with that. But there are many, 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 many people in this world today, most people in this world today would love to have the problems that we have. They'd love to have them. And this isn't said to make us feel guilty about what we have. I'm going to have more to say in coming weeks about motivation, and certainly the best motivation to have the right perspective on riches is not guilt, but gratitude. But the first possible danger or pitfall or side effect of being wealthy is just not admitting it. It's being in denial. The second one is this, and that is rich people are often afflicted with discontentment. In fact, Paul says it himself in 1 Timothy chapter 6 before the passage that we read just a minute ago. Paul says in verse 6 of 1 Timothy 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that." People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Rich, I'll just let you know right now, we're not going to do the video. So basically, what this is saying is that there is a tendency for us, the more we get, the more we have, the more we have an appetite, and the more we feed that appetite, the larger that appetite grows, and we want more and more and more and more. Some people use the word materialism. Others use other words to describe what that is, consumerism. But it comes in all different kinds of forms. And it's the reality that sometimes there's a distortion between this whole concept of what I have, what I need, what I want, what I just absolutely have to have, what I might like to have someday, or maybe that thing, I'll just die if I don't get it, whatever that thing is. And so the video clip I was going to play, but it's just a little bit too long, is Stanley talking about this whole idea of upgrade, and he does it in a very humorous way. And it's just a way of life for us. We like to upgrade. We have a phone that works perfectly fine, and it does basically everything we need it to do, but we want to upgrade it. We have a car that runs just fine, and yet we go to the dealership, and we get a car that basically does the same thing, and then we give him money to boot on top of that. And he humorously says, you know, these are the crazy things that rich people do. Just making the point that, you know, we don't want to say that we're rich, but we do a lot of things that a lot of people in this world would consider very much what rich people do. So that desire for more or better, not being satisfied. And I'll tell you, quite frankly, I look at what Paul has to say here in 1 Timothy 6 about this whole idea of being content with food and clothing. And there's a part of me that says, what? For real? And part of it's just this conditioning that we have, you have, I have. But you think, just if for a month or two, we practiced just being content with just the basic things that we need in life to live, after the end of that 2 months, how much better off we might be financially in a lot of ways. I know some of you are struggling with the whole issue of debt right now. And sometimes that issue of debt might be things that you can control. Sometimes there are things you can't control. There are some of you here with student loans that are in the tens of thousands of dollars. And once again, you make choices. Sometimes things will cause us to have to do that. And then sometimes we make choices and make purchases for things maybe we don't necessarily need, or maybe we don't need to buy it right now. But it's living in an age that is just bombarding us with more, better, new. If you're on your devices and you buy something, you go to another device, you're going to see an ad for what you looked at on that other device. It's diabolical. And I just looked at some shoes online on my Kindle Fire several weeks ago, and now everywhere I'm going, I'm seeing ads for shoes. How do they do that? I know some of you know. Some of you probably do that. But Stanley says, we go to our closet, we see a closet full of clothes, and we say, I don't have anything to wear. Or he uses the illustration, we have 11 pairs of shoes, and we need more shoes. And when I listened to that in his video, I went to my closet and counted my pairs of shoes. I have 14 pairs of shoes, by the way. I don't wear about half of them. But it's this thing that if it's fed the right way and can be kept under control, or if sometimes we need to starve that appetite, it shrinks. It's just fighting this idea that we heard in the ad for Dr. Pepper, I want it all. And what's the next statement? I want it all, and what? I want it now. All 23 flavors in Dr. Pepper, or whatever it might be. Okay, a third possible side effect from riches is this: it can produce arrogance. I'm not going to spend hardly any time at this this morning. But there is an inclination when we have more to feel more important, to feel better than somebody else. And if we don't, and maybe we're on the other end of the spectrum and we don't have what they have, we might say, well, they're materialistic, all they want is things, they're stuck up, and you know, deep inside we're envious of what they have and we'd like to have it. Because if I had what they have, I wouldn't have the attitudes that those people have. It can be insidious. Staying with the shoe theme, and I wasn't planning on doing this morning. I think I may have told y'all the story when I was growing up. We didn't have a lot of money. And I had gym in junior high. And my mother went to Kmart and bought me a pair of cheap tennis shoes. They were the kind that their soles were, you wouldn't describe them as rubber soles, you would describe them as plastic soles. They had no grip, but they were probably $2.95 in one of the bins there at Kmart. So I had gym, and we'd start playing basketball, and I'd start running around because I was competitive, and I wanted to compete with the other guys, and I would just start sliding all over the place. Sliding. I never stopped. I just slid. Maybe I should have tried ice skating. And I would get teased. They would say, "Grady! Grady's wearing his sliders." Seriously. Now back then it was semi-traumatic. It was embarrassing. I didn't like it. But I remember how I felt when I bought my first pair of Converse All-Stars. And then I began walking around like this so everybody could see them. You know, I finally made it big time. And in Jewish culture, there was this idea, if you had more, if you had wealth, if you had more things, if you had more possessions, there was this automatic belief that somehow God had blessed you and chosen you, and it meant that you were in God's favor. And so that's why in Mark chapter 10, in that conversation that Jesus has with the rich young ruler, when Jesus says it's hard for the rich to enter the kingdom, we're told that the disciples were amazed. And then when he said it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle, it says there, they were even more amazed, to the point that Peter asked the question, who then can be saved? Who can be saved? And so whether it's, you know, placing somebody on a pedestal because they have more than us, or looking down on others because we have more stuff, whatever it is, in the ultimate outcome, we need to remember, from a Christian standpoint, from the standpoint I believe most of us this morning are where we are, maybe not necessarily everybody here, but most of us, we believe that it's not ours anyway. My life is a gift. My ability to earn a living is a gift because God has given me a life and He's given me abilities. And even if I've worked hard to glorify Him, I couldn't have done that without His power and His strength and life itself, right? It's all His. And so the attitude that says, well, I've done this, I've been smart, I've worked hard, I've been a lot smarter than anybody else out here and how they've used their money, well, that's all fine and good, and God will bless you for your stewardship. But that doesn't mean any less that it's not yours to begin with. It's God's. Everything is God's. And so, and we're not talking about the focal point this morning is not on the part of, giving and sharing and generous and what that means. But that will come. And our hope can shift. Quickly here. Our hope can shift. Notice what he says. This is another possible dangerous side effect. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. And so there is this tendency, the more we accumulate, we earn more, there is this tendency to associate then what we have or what we can possess or what we can keep with a certain level of security. And if you were to ask any person out there the question, how much would it take, how much would you need to have to live in this total sense of total security, that you would have enough to secure every possible contingency in the future that you could possibly face, every one of us would say, how much, if we were asked how much would it take, we would say, well, not enough. Because if our security is in what we have and our source of hope is in what we have, there will never be enough. Never. And so we have to understand that one of the chief competitors for our hearts and our trust and being drawn away from putting our hope in God are these things. Jesus would not have talked about it so much. No one can serve two masters. Either he will love one and hate the other, or he will cling to one or despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon, money, things. And so, let's be careful we don't fool ourselves or trick ourselves into thinking all this talk about rich people doesn't apply to me. Because in some ways, I think it applies to most of us. I'm going to close by saying this. People who have found hope in God and are living hope in God, I believe, are the happiest, best adjusted people you will find, because they are people who know that their hope, their security, their well-being is not in something that eventually is not going to be there anymore. Paul says, we came into this world with nothing, we're going to leave this world with nothing. And when you leave, you're going to leave 100% somewhere. And we think, somehow, we fool ourselves into thinking that if I just have more, if I could get more, save more, we can spend or save our lives into this idea of hope or security. But the fact is, the people out there who are filthy rich, I mean filthy rich, not Grady rich, filthy rich. Those people are not necessarily happier or well-adjusted or more secure in where they are in life. In fact, studies have shown you reach a certain threshold of having just the basic things that you need in life, and studies have been done on those that make this much and those that are worth just tons more money. And studies show that the difference between those that are way up there and those that are down here and don't have nearly as much, but have their basic needs met, their happiness and contentment and joy are all about the same. And it's dependent on things that aren't tied to money, because there are many things out there that money cannot buy. And God richly provides us with all these things for our enjoyment. And so God isn't saying, don't enjoy your riches, don't spend money. If you want to upgrade and you feel that's the right, responsible thing to do, then go ahead and upgrade. If you want to go crazy and splurge and rent a car and drive to Gatlinburg, go ahead and do that and don't feel anything about it. But at the same time, just because we can afford it doesn't mean we should get it or buy it. You hear that? Just because you can afford something, and sometimes we buy things that we can't afford, but even if we can afford it, doesn't necessarily mean we need to buy it. Sometimes we need to say no. And I'm not sharing all this stuff with you to make you or myself feel guilty. First and foremost, it is to help us all feel incredibly grateful. And that there are practical steps we can take to live better, live richer lives. And one of those is just remembering that God is such a giver and has done so much. He did it for us before we even responded to Him or did anything for Him when He sent His Son to die for our sins. And that was done out of love. And that love is there even though you even may never reciprocate it. God is the first giver. And so let's make a commitment right now to quit chasing after something that we're never going to find. And eventually we're all going to discover when we come to the end of life that this was true, whenever that is. We can't hoard, we can't save, we can't earn, we can't spend our way to security. It's only in God. Command those who are rich in this present world not to trust in riches, which are so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us everything for our enjoyment. And that ultimate gift is Christ Himself. Do you need to respond to Him? Encourage you, if you need to in any way, whether it's baptism or just want to study some more or talk, let us know as we stand and sing this song.